What does it mean to speak of humans having dominion over the earth? Welcome to Good Word. I am David Thomas, your host for this quarter. I am happy to have again my conversation partners, Brant Berglund, a professor of New Testament in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and Daryl Bigger, also a professor who has been teaching for a long time in the School of Theology. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Our lesson this week is participating in the bigger story that we're going to look at for the whole quarter on the restoration of things as God would have them restored. And today we focus on this question of dominion, restoring dominion. The Bible says in the beginning that Adam and Eve had dominion. That word is not a very happy word anymore. It seems to have some rather negative connotations. So I'd love to hear you reflect on this word dominion, perhaps in its original sense, and perhaps how we should look at it today.
There's definitely a sense today that the word dominion has inequality of power and perhaps abuse, the usurpation of a position that isn't always given
and
to
coercion.
Coercion, yeah. No question. I'm not convinced that's what the original biblical use of the word is, and I don't have my Hebrew Bible in front of me right now, so I don't know the original word, but when I see that Adam and Eve were originally given dominion over the earth, it doesn't seem like they were given that an authority over the earth to abuse it in any way.
Mm-hmm. So you would see that word dominion originally having to do more with care and I don't know, nurture, supervision, some kind?
We do think of it in a negative sense, don't we? And yet, if we look at their opportunities in their original placement in the garden, those were occasions for enhancing what was there. Didn't have anything to do with a kind of throttling back or requiring of others as kind of obedience, mindless obedience. But it had to do with them expanding and enhancing the possibilities of everything and everyone around them.
Caring for what was there.
Mm-hmm.
See? And, when I think of Eden, I don't envision Adam and Eve just sitting under a tree eating bonbons. I think there must have been some constructive activity. And I have thought in my own mind that this word dominion is a word that reflects the fact that they had care of the garden in which they were placed, that there were, I imagine, trees to be trained or vines to be trained, fruit to be picked and eaten.
One of the first characteristics.
No weeds to be pulled, right?
No weeds. One of the first characteristics we see of Adam, the man, is that he begins to name the animals, which suggests a taxonomy. He begins to survey the world around him, the new world in which he's put, and he doesn't abuse power. He doesn't take a domineering stance over creation. Instead, he names it. He becomes familiar with it enough to give it a characteristic as he sees it. And that tells me that he has a unique relationship to his creation from the very beginning.
And a relationship is a key to me. It is a relationship, not a kind of servitude.
The animals were not there to do his bidding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is interesting when you read the Genesis account that the dominion that was given precisely to both the man and the woman. That whatever dominion was given to the man was also given to the woman. And so I'm wondering if that strikes any fire in your minds here today. What do we take that to mean? Because in most places there's a hierarchy of men presiding over the business of life and women playing a more subservient role. In some cultures, that's very significant. I mean, it's very marked. It's very clear. It's established. But both were given equal dominion. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm intrigued with the sequence of the creation story. Some have suggested that Eve, the female, was a sort of afterthought in that process. I see it just the other way around, actually, that the naming of the animals all day long by Adam pointed out that he wasn't in the fullest sense whole.
Mm-hmm.
So she becomes an important and essential component of the human race.
Yeah. And I love that part where it talks about when God brought Eve to Adam, you can read between the lines that he knew exactly what God had done and he was delighted. Mm-hmm. He was overjoyed.
Yes.
He was overjoyed. Do you think that what kind of limitations would there be on that kind of dominion? Are there some things that were allowable or appropriate and some that were not?
Genesis 1, verse 28 says, "Then God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.'" There probably were limits in the sense that man was going to maintain the pristine beauty of the world. All he would probably want to do would be improve on what was there if he could. And maybe there were some instructions. We don't have them here, divine instructions. Here's what you can do with the vines. Here's what you can do with the animals. Today we train animals to do certain things. We grow our relationship with our pets, our dogs, our cats. Maybe he was encouraged to do that with all creatures.
So he should not diminish then the grandeur of the creation in which he was placed.
Yeah. And the boundaries of the geography are assumed here as well, and stated as such, that he had responsibility for the earth, not the solar system, not other planets elsewhere. This is where you belong. So he was to bloom where he was planted.
That's an interesting thought, Darrell. Yeah. I like that. What does it say about the place in which they occupied in creation, the fact that they were given dominion? Because the lions weren't given dominion, and the elephants weren't given dominion. Humans were given dominion. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the thought processes of human beings, in my mind, are an essential part of what God's image involves. Oh. So an ability to reason and to anticipate and to create an environment in which these other life forms could flourish and become more and more productive for themselves would fit that scheme.
So do you think it means that human life is more valuable than other forms of life? So, for example, I remember back when they did that baboon heart transplant. They took a heart from a baboon and put it in a human baby, and there was a big ruckus over that because they killed the baboon in order to harvest his heart. Mm-hmm. This would suggest that that's allowable?
I think there is a logical progression here, and some of the earlier forms of plant and animal life sustain and nurture those more refined forms. So yeah. I don't have any problem with that.
I have a friend who believes that, in fact, several friends who believe that if the world came about through evolutionary means, then there's no reason that we should think of ourselves more highly than any other living creature. It is a form of arrogance because just wait a couple more million or billion years and see what we become then. We will be thought of as very little, probably nothing. But if we take a biblical creation view, then we see humanity as the pinnacle of God's creation on this earth. But also that gives us a unique responsibility not to ignore the other parts of creation, but to say they were made even before we were. They have preeminence in terms of time, and we ought to be caring for them as much as a part of creation.
Sure, and that implies then, Brent, that the dominion is not so much authority as it is support.
Or responsibility.
Yes.
And I wanted to bring that in here. I mean, whenever you have a privileged position, which we could say Adam and Eve have in that story, does that not, in fact, I was always taught with privilege comes responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You buy into that?
Sure. I think with power there comes a level of obvious responsibility that we are to take care of those around us. But this also assumes that the brokenness has not affected me too badly. Last week we talked about the brokenness of man, and somehow I need to get past that brokenness and maybe the sense of dominance that I might wish to take naturally and say, no, this is not what God wanted in creation.
It's really a two-way street, that the earlier forms of life support the later ones, but the later ones are responsible to nurture and sustain the earlier ones. So it goes both directions.
I wonder if it's more of a symbiotic relationship than in the way we see our world functioning, to keep everything in harmony. Mm. Everybody's valuable. Everything is valuable.
So I'm struggling a little bit with your characterization of early life forms and later life forms.
I'm talking about the sequence of the creation,
I
had in mind.
Okay, that's helpful to me, because I could run a lot of ways with that.
Thank you.
Wow. So It seems then that humans have a responsibility to be respectful of all life forms, except mosquitoes. I'm teasing you all. I once worked for a man who I thought hated trees because he cut so many down. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that before you cut a tree down, you ought to have a little religious ceremony of apology, saying that you have been here longer than I have, and, you know, I'm sorry I have to cut you down, but at least have a moment of respect. I'm half serious when I say that. It is interesting, Daryl, when you talk about that reciprocity, because where we mistreat the very things that may be lower life forms or lower down on the food chain, we abuse their environment and their location. We end up with tarnished wares ourselves. We end up with stuff that's no longer useful.
Sure.
Yeah. But this also becomes important, I think, when we're talking about the animals in this world and the life. You notice in the garden there's no predation. There's no eating of animals for food. Every green tree and everything that grows on them is for food. That tells me also something about God's desire for life, that certain things were created to be sustenance for others and certain things were not.
So if God is in the business, or if his desire is to restore what has been lost, okay, part of that is dominion. How do you see a restored dominion looking? I mean, because today we're horrible in the way we treat other people. I mean, people exercise dominion kind of as an authoritarian mandate. I happen to have dominion, and sorry about you guys. You better serve my interests, otherwise you get pounded on. What is a restored dominion going to look like?
It certainly points toward the words you used earlier, and that is privilege. Privileged persons and groups and classes and nations, from this biblical perspective, have a responsibility toward others. It may not always be possible to equalize everything, but there is a responsibility and a reciprocity that is built into these early stories in Scripture.
And it's fascinating that we very easily abuse our positions and our privilege. Mm. See, what do you think we can do to prevent that?
Recognize our own frailty and our own need of others to take care of us at times. We live in a world where we are not autonomous.
Mm. Yeah. And our abusing that is an indication of our own lack of self-confidence, our own defensiveness.
In other words, I become abusive in order to protect my own sense of frailty. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, very interesting. And, of course, in the weeks to come, we'll be talking more about this, because one of the major elements of restoration is the gospel. And we'll bring that in here in a little while, on another day. But I want to remind us all that the power of God is at work here. Otherwise, we don't achieve this. So, thank you very much for an interesting conversation today. My thanks to you, and my thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and my thanks to those of you who are listening for the Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.